is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day when President Biden has a chance to look over his report card. Yeah, that's right. The Washington Post does this exercise. Here's the grade that Biden gets for his first 100 days from the pundit panel on the Washington Post. That's people who vote for the Washington Post. They also allowed readers to write in. They published many of the readers' comments, and they analyzed their basic average for what they received from people writing in. And A, B, C, D, for some reason, they never let someone get an E. And we give him an E grade in energy conservation or in environmentalism. No, it's not that. Just A, B, C, D, F. There are some Fs. I mean, you got to admit there are some Fs where just nothing, either nothing has happened or everything that has happened has been kind of negative. Immigration was supposed to be a big issue for Joe Biden. At the very, very least, he promised, and on the stump constantly, was he was going to do something for the Dreamers. And that's kind of a popular policy. And have you seen any work on behalf of the Dreamers? The Dreamers being defined as people who came to this country when they were below the age of 12, with their parents, have not done anything illegal or wrong or felonious or major misdemeanors, have lived in the United States all their lives, and they don't want automatic citizenship. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about what many Republicans have talked about literally for years, for decades now, which is a path to citizenship. Now, come on, doesn't that deserve an F? Would that, I know what people would say defending Joe Biden is, well, Trump was worse, the Republicans are worse, the Republicans are so bad. That's what's so terrible about our politics at the moment, is that what everybody is concerned about is not how great my folks are, but how bad the other guys are. And one of those issues on which President Biden certainly deserves below a C, it is below average, is this fumbling, bumbling, incoherent efforts at foreign policy. And last night in his press conference, and it was the most shocking part of the press conference to me, he described a potential Russian invasion of Ukraine as virtually inevitable. And as a minor incursion, he didn't think it would be so bad. And this is what he said last night. Part of what he said last night that got him into a world of trouble on this issue of Russia and Ukraine, with literally over 100,000 Russian troops perched on the border and ready to pounce. So what does the president do to discourage Putin from taking that leap into restoring the old Soviet Union by clamping down on the most significant of the former Soviet Socialist Republics that is now an independent nation? Here's what the president said last night. Listen.
I think what you're going to see is that Russia will be held accountable if it invades. And it depends on what it does. It's one thing if it's a minor incursion and then we end up having to fight about what to do and not do, et cetera. But if they actually do what they're capable of doing with the force amassed on the border, it is going to be a disaster for Russia if they further invade Ukraine.
Okay, this is problematic because nobody did anything effective after they not only invaded Crimea, which was part of Ukraine, recognized by the United Nations as part of Ukraine, and they basically annexed Crimea, which does have a substantial Russian population. It's about 50-50. There may even be, certainly in the elections that Putin sponsored, there was a majority of residents of Crimea who said no, they wanted to be part of Russia because they preferred Russian nationalism to Ukrainian nationalism. Okay, that's bad enough because Crimea, believe it or not, you may remember they had the Winter Olympics near Crimea in what was Sochi, I believe. Because it's one of those areas of Russia where it has very moderate temperatures. You're not going to have the kind of winters that are going to freeze Napoleon out of Moscow. So the idea that he called any kind of invasion by Russia of Ukraine could be just a minor incursion. So this afternoon, at the start of an event on the extremely exciting subject of infrastructure, by the way, it is exciting. I think it's a good thing. Congratulations to the Republicans who supported the infrastructure bill, who helped to craft a reasonable infrastructure bill. I'm glad it passed. So, of course, Biden, given that's his singular big legislative success, he likes to come back to that. He was doing an event on infrastructure, and here's his attempt to clarify what he just said about a minor incursion. Clip three.
I've been absolutely clear with President Putin. He has no misunderstanding. If any assembled Russian units move across the Ukrainian border, that is an invasion. But it will be met with severe and coordinated economic response that I've discussed in detail with our allies, as well as laid out very clearly for President Putin. But there is no doubt, let there be no doubt at all, that if Putin makes this choice, Russia will pay a heavy price.
Okay, he left a lot of doubt last night. He said when he came back around to Ukraine, I think on the third strike, where he was out, was he said, well, this is Putin's decision. This is entirely in his hands. It's up to him. There will be consequences. It wasn't, first of all, not the consequences that Putin would most fear and would probably have the most impact on actually changing events. It's not a consequence of invading some Russian territory. It's the consequence of actually providing more support for Ukraine, maybe even some air support for Ukrainian forces, which we could do, doing what General Wesley Clark has suggested, which is sending some air capacity to American allies in Romania and in Bulgaria, because there's a whole cluster of countries that do not want to be subjugated again to the old Iron Curtain. That should be very much in the past. And you're talking about substantial countries, of course, led by Poland, but also including the Czech Republic and Slovakia, even where Melania Trump is from, Slovenia, and Moldova is one of the very few, Moldova and Belarus, and then the three, I mean, Belarus is also now has Putin troops in it, and the independence of so many of these Eastern European countries is being deliberately undermined by Putin. And there's a statement by the president of Ukraine. Remember him, Volodymyr Zelensky, former TV comic, who is now a president and a fairly inspiring president of Ukraine. He responded to Biden on Twitter today, writing, "We want to remind the great powers that there are no minor incursions and small nations, just as there are no minor casualties and little grief from the loss of loved ones. I say this as the president of a great power." And again, the idea that Ukraine would be a simple pushover, it's more complicated. We'll get to that and more on The Medved Show. And on the Michael Medved Show, last night I stayed up fairly late because I get up early in the morning, and usually a little before 5 these days. But there's so much to cover and so much to digest. But last night I stayed up late watching a just wonderful knockout movie that is going to be opening tomorrow on Netflix. It's going to be available on Netflix starting tomorrow, and we'll review it, and we'll do a full review. But one of the things about the movie, and I think it's not deliberate, I don't think they're releasing it right now because of the situation in Ukraine, but it's a movie called Munich at the Edge of War. And it's a fictional account, but full of historical fact and truth about the Munich conference that was an attempt to prevent or at least delay World War II, but that meant that the great powers, and in this case it meant the European powers, Britain and France, basically abandoning the Czechs, Czechoslovakia, which had been a new country created after World War I, and they were abandoning it to a guy named Hitler. And by the way, movie features Jeremy Irons as Neville Chamberlain, and he's terrific. My God, he does a spot on, because you can see Neville Chamberlain, the real prime minister who appeased or tried to appease Hitler. You can see him in real footage from the 1920s and 30s. And there is a tremendous ability, it seems to me, to link what Biden did in his debate with what I saw later that night, what the whole world is going to be seeing on the Friday after the Wednesday when Biden had his press conference. You can't just abandon people. And one of the things that's shocking that comes across about the Munich conference is that the Czechs, whose country was being carved up, weren't even invited to the conference. It was like they didn't even count, which is why what Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says is so powerful and moving, if you remember the way the Czechs were treated, even by their so-called allies, who basically abandoned them to Hitler. Zelensky wrote back, "We want to remind the great powers that there are no minor incursions." Yeah, what's a minor incursion? How would we react? Think about it, to a minor incursion from Canada. Yeah, right. Or to a minor incursion. And I know it's very different when people come here because they want to live here and work here. And of course they shouldn't come illegally, and of course that should be enforced, and of course people should only come when they have the legal papers to do so. But it's very different than the Wehrmacht marching in with tanks and troops. And imagine if that happened to the United States. Well, you don't have to imagine. 1914, same time that actually started 1911, Pancho Villa, Mexican bandit and revolutionary, big left winger, he was fighting against American troops that were trying to suppress him because we wanted to stabilize the government in Mexico. And he marched into Columbus, New Mexico, and burned it. Pretty much burned the town to the ground. And that began a hunt for Pancho Villa, which, again, not the most glorious incident in the history of American arms, but we got him. But that's another story. The story with with President Biden is extraordinarily depressing. Because listen to what happened when Savannah Guthrie, who increasingly, I think, does a good job and is pretty tough on Biden and Harris, she challenged Kamala Harris on Russia and the Ukraine today. And she actually, when the vice president started babbling, which she did, Savannah Guthrie challenged her. And good for her. This is clip 13. Listen.
Did the president essentially give the green light to Vladimir Putin to take a piece of Ukraine, to take a bite out of Ukraine?
I will tell you that part of the posture that we have taken is grounded in the respect and the value we place in sovereignty and territorial integrity.
Madam
and in
Vice
particular
President,
in this case,
I'm sorry
the
to interrupt.
Sovereignty and territorial yeah. integrity of Ukraine.
Of course, and
so
I'm so sorry to interrupt, but it is less than clear because 30 minutes after the news conference, the White House press secretary had to actually clarify the president's remarks.
Savannah, I'm being clear with you right now.
Yes, okay.
And so if you're interested, I'll continue to be clear.
Yeah, did you hear that as perfect clarity? Here's perfect clarity. Actually, it's our tweet of the day.
Turn the page now to the internet.
I mean, wow, what a great, smart tweet.
Change his password so he no longer has access to his Twitter feed.
Did you send the tweet?
I did not send that tweet. My system was hacked. I was pranked.
Donald Trump hasn't tweeted at us once, and I'm starting to get worried about him.
So we have a new tweet.
All right.
Can I do the honors?
Stand by. Tweet alert.
The tweet is from Congresswoman Liz Cheney. And yes, she still is performing her duties as a member of the House of Representatives while she is engaged in the select committee that is composed mostly of Democrats, except for her and Adam Kinzinger, the committee investigating the riot on the Capitol grounds that occurred on January 6th. In any event, she sent out a tweet that had nothing to do with that. It said this: President Biden's description of a potential Russian invasion of Ukraine as a minor incursion was deeply troubling and dangerous. Putin must understand that any Russian invasion will be met with a swift and overwhelming response from the U.S. and our NATO allies. That's clear. What you heard from Kamala Harris was not clear. The unfortunate thing is that Liz Cheney is not commander-in-chief or anywhere near it. Joe Biden is. The Jen Psaki was also taking up one of the other confusing aspects of the president's performance last night. President Trump, outrageously, and he deserved the criticism he received in both the campaign of 2016 and the campaign of 2020. He claimed the elections were rigged, including the election that he ended up winning. He claimed in advance they were rigged and he wouldn't necessarily support the results of the election. And last night, it did sound like, you can judge for yourself, that Joe Biden was doing the same thing. And if it's the same thing, you ought to get the same criticism. So, did Joe Biden call the election rigged? We'll get to that question and more coming up on the Medved Show.
1-800.
A low light from the press conference last night, the worst part of the press conference, in fact, for the president, other than the basically undermining President Zelensky of Ukraine, who's trying to make peace with President Petro Poroshenko, who's the previous president, who there are some efforts to put him in jail. He just returned to the Ukraine. Look, it's a challenging situation, and we need as much solidarity and support as possible from as many NATO nations and as many of our allies as possible for Ukrainian sovereignty. And the administration has to be far more clear on that. But it's also this issue about whether Joe Biden would fully accept an election return, an election result, as legitimate, which President Trump was rightly criticized for not accepting. If he would say in advance he's going to accept the results of any election that occurs in 2022 or 2024, why won't he say that? It's more of an attempt to gain pressure for his electoral reform, so-called. This is the way he talked about it last night at the press conference. A reporter asked him if whether he believed the election would be fair, and the interchange sounded like this. It's clip five.
Speaking of voting rights legislation, if this isn't passed, do you still believe the upcoming election will be fairly conducted and its results will be legitimate?
Well, it all depends on whether or not we're able to make the case to the American people that some of this is being set up to try to alter the outcome of the election. And it's one thing, look, maybe I'm just being too much of an optimist. Remember how we thought not that many people were going to show up to vote in the middle of a pandemic? We had the highest voter turnout in the history of the United States of America. Well, I think if, in fact, no matter how hard they make it for minorities to vote, I think you're going to see them willing to stand in line and defy the attempt to keep them from being able to vote. I think you're going to see the people we're trying to keep from being able to show up, showing up and making the sacrifice it needs to be made in order to change the law back to what it should be. But it's going to be difficult. I make no bones about that. It's going to be difficult. But we're not there yet. We've not run out of options yet. And we'll see how this moves.
Okay, this is an outrageous non-answer. What he's saying is, well, we don't know. Let's see. And we should be optimistic because the fact that he points out, and he's right, that we had the highest turnout since 1908, it's not of all time, but it's since 1908, it's since women got the right to vote, and so greatly expanded the electorate, then it was harder to get a high percentage of people turning out, because you had two members of the family had to turn out, not just one. Got it? So, in any event, it was a huge turnout, and it was up from, and up in every voting group, and there was no increased gap between black and white communities in most states. More black people turned out as a percentage of the eligible voters than white people. So there was a second attempt to try to get some clarity from Biden, the president of the United States, on whether the president of the United States thought we were going to be conducting a legitimate election. It's, and people were right to press Trump on this, and they're right to press Biden, but he doesn't seem to understand. Clip six.
You were asked whether or not you believed that we would have free and fair elections in 2022 if some of these state legislatures reformed their voting protocols. You said that it depends. Do you think that they would in any way be illegitimate?
Oh, yeah, I think it easily can be illegitimate. Imagine if, in fact, Trump has succeeded in convincing Pence to not count the votes. Imagine if...
In regards to 2022, sir, the midterm
election. Oh, 2022. I mean, imagine if those attempts to say that the count was not legit. You have to recount it, and we're not going to count. We're going to discard the following votes. I mean, sure, I'm not saying it's going to be legit. It's the increase in the prospect of being illegitimate is in direct proportion to us not being able to get these reforms passed. But I don't think you're going to see, you're not going to see me, and I don't think you're going to see the Democratic Party give up on coming back at assuming that the attempt fails today.
Okay, this is so pathetic. And then you have this Jen Psaki on Twitter today trying to clarify the whole thing. She says, let's be clear, the president was not casting doubt on the legitimacy of the 2022 election. He was making the opposite point. In 2020, a record number of voters turned out in the face of a pandemic, and election officials made sure they could vote and have those votes counted. He was explaining that the results would be illegitimate if states do what the former president asked them to do after the 2020 election, toss out ballots and overturn results after the fact. The big lie is putting our democracy at risk. We're fighting to protect it. Is that a clear answer? I mean, for goodness sake, do you think that they would have any chance? Because I know that they wouldn't, of having courts overturn an election because there were fewer drop boxes in a given county than they expected. Because, and this was a big thing, it's a big thing that they introduced as a high priority in their voting reform. Part of what they called the Right to Vote Act meant that people get a day off on Election Day. What if you don't want a day off? Well, here's another day off. And again, that's just another burden on American business. And I don't even know how that polls. I think it's fairly popular. But what is racial about having a day off for Election Day? It's only, you think it's only black people who work for a living and have to worry about not coming into work or working from home? Or, I mean, the entire lack of logic about this whole deal, and then the inability to try to clarify Joe Biden's confusion on this whole issue of whether an election is legitimate or not. He should have learned from the last time that don't go there. Why would he want to imitate Trump on this? Casey Hunt of CNN asked Majority Whip James Clyburn of South Carolina about his opinion on this controversy, but clip 12.
Do you agree with what he said in that press conference? Are you concerned that without these voting rights bills, the election results won't be legitimate?
I'm absolutely concerned about that. First of all, thanks for having me. Let me remind the audience that in 1965, at the time of the advent of the Voting Rights Act, only 3% of African Americans in Alabama were registered to vote. We come in with the 1965 Voting Rights Act, and look what we have now. 9 years ago, the Supreme Court took direct aim at that act.
Okay, the Supreme Court did not take direct aim at that act, and the registration hasn't dropped. And what the Supreme Court was doing was taking aim at the fact that certain states, based on their past, were being treated differently in terms of their present. That was the basic idea of the court decision. This is a foolishness. There is zero evidence that that court decision did anything to suppress black turnout. And this whole idea that emphasizing racial division is going to pay off for the Democrats, all kinds of evidence that it won't, especially with the Republicans now offering a positive program. We'll get to that coming up on the Medved Show.
You are speaking truth,
Medved.
Your brilliance shining light onto this, speaking your truth, is nothing short of heroic.
And on the Michael Medved Show, one thing that you got to figure out is, what is Joe Biden going to do to turn attention away from some of the confusion, some of the failure highlighted by his press conference yesterday? Look, the one thing you got to say about the guy is he was up there for 2 hours. He kept going. He kept in a relatively good mood, but he wasn't particularly coherent on everything, and certainly on issues like the question of accepting the legitimacy of the election, which ought to be a no-brainer, or the support for Ukraine in its gallant struggle to defend its sovereignty and independence. That should also be a no-brainer. We have allies who are doing better on this than the United States of America at the moment. Speaking of doing better, there is one aspect where we are doing remarkably well, and it puts part of the COVID situation in perspective. Is as of January 12th, so not quite up to date, but as of January 12th, that's the latest we have from the CDC, we've lost 834,949, so about 835,000 of our fellow Americans to COVID. That's 834,000 of all ages. COVID deaths 18 and under. And this astonished me. I mean, I knew it would be much less, but not this much less. We are talking about COVID deaths of 18 and under are 841. That's remarkable. That's less than 1 out of 1,000 are deaths of people 18 and under, which is one of the reasons that I think there are so many Americans who are very, very eager to keep our schools open and functioning. Because obviously you can have very serious consequences without dying from COVID. My wife has researched a great deal, is very concerned with long COVID and its impact. And yes, kids can get long COVID, but they don't have the same likelihood. COVID remains a disease that disproportionately and very disproportionately implicates and destroys older people, and particularly unvaccinated older people. There's a piece about vaccinations that I think is going to be very, very controversial. We will get to that. There is a big picture here in terms of what is going on for the election coming up. And I think it was framed extremely well by Joe Scarborough, who had on Ron Klain, the president's chief of staff. And this is what Scarborough, who's a former Republican congressman from Florida, it's what Scarborough on MSNBC had to say to the White House chief of staff. Listen, this is clip 14.
Moderation is selling in the Democratic Party. So why is it that it seems time and time again the president has overreached, moved too far left, and has not been able to bring those final two senators home?
Well, first of all, I think the president is right in the middle of where the country is. You look at what's in our Build Back Better plan, bringing down the cost of childcare. I think that's a very moderate thing for families. Reducing the cost of prescription drugs, saying you shouldn't have to pay more than $35 for insulin. I think that's an all-American mainstream proposal.
Okay, but that's not what the issue is. The issue is, well, things that they just battled about last night, preserving the filibuster, for instance. There was a senator who, back in 2005, took a very, very strong position defending the filibuster as an intrinsic part of the American constitutional structure and necessary to preserve. Listen and see if you recognize the voice.
Once you change the rules and surrender the Senate's institutional power, you never get it back. And we're about to break the rules to change the rules. Under our rules, you're required to get a two-thirds vote. 60 votes to change the rules. Isn't what really is going on here? The majority doesn't want to hear what others have to say, even if it's the truth. The nuclear option abandons America's sense of fair play. It's the one thing this country stands for, not filling the playing field on the side of those who control and own the field. I say to my friends on the Republican side, you may own the field right now, but you won't own it forever. And I pray God, when the Democrats take back control, we don't make the kind of naked power grab you are doing.
Okay, that's Joe Biden, believe it or not. Can you imagine? I pray to God Dems don't end the filibuster when we're in power. This is a, by the way, a political ad waiting to happen. And it's one of the good things about the fact that congressmen get their speeches recorded. We're also going to have on the record a new reproach for Republicans. Republicans are expected, this is the Washington Post, to focus their new platform on education policies aimed at tapping into parental discontent, countering the rise of China with new economic measures, and oversight of the Biden administration. They're also looking at invoking other traditional GOP goals, such as cutting taxes, restricting immigration, criticizing Silicon Valley, and repealing some environmental rules. What are we talking about? We're talking about Kevin McCarthy working together with Newt Gingrich, who's done this before, to isolate 10 or fewer goals that Republicans can agree on. So they can answer that demand that Joe Biden tried to make last night. I don't know what the Republicans are for. Well, you will eventually. A part of the impetus for this was New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu, who everybody wanted to run for the Senate because he was way ahead in that potential race against Maggie Hassan. And Chris Sununu said no. He was one of the top recruits. He told the Washington Examiner this week that he decided against making a run because in conversations with Republican senators, he was led to believe they only planned to be a roadblock to President Biden's agenda. And Biden then cited Sununu's remarks in his part of his news conference. Think about this. What are the Republicans for, said Biden? What are they for? Name me one thing they're for. Well, they're going to name 10. By contrast, McCarthy told Breitbart last week that his caucus is working on producing policy positions, some of which have already been released, that will then be rolled into a broader pledge outlining the House GOP's key policy priorities. But questions abound about the seriousness of that effort and whether the Republican policy platforms will amount to much more than a messaging effort. Democrats say they're eager for the GOP to release a policy vision they can run against, believing it is far easier for Republicans to point out problems in the economy than offer material solutions. Donald Trump's repeated falsehood about the results of the 2020 presidential election and are not going to work for the Republicans. I think Wachimos is right about that. The federal deficit also exploded under Trump, in part as a result of the coronavirus pandemic. They're talking about including a balanced budget constitutional amendment, which almost got passed years ago in the Clinton administration. I think it was 1997. They came passed the House and got very close to passing the Senate one vote. Gingrich said he's hopeful the GOP will incorporate that balanced budget amendment, a long-sought conservative policy goal that would require enormous cuts to federal spending programs. He argued that Republicans will provide a robust agenda. And this is all positive stuff. Steve Moore is also involved in this, a friend of this show, in this process. He says, I don't think we'll call it the Contract for America, but there's going to be the same kind of very robust Republican promises list for what they will do if or when they take control of the House. And yes, I think that's a positive step and will help. Meanwhile, they have ended all vaccine and mask mandates. Where? At the same time that in France, Macron the president made a statement that he wants to make life difficult and painful for people who elect not to get vaccinated. An American columnist thinks that's a good thing and that he's right on. We will get to those issues and to much more coming up in this greatest nation on God's green earth.